You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It's a pleasure to say we are joined, as we have the privilege of being each week, by Diana West, one of the most interesting people I know, a woman who has contributed mightily over many years through her outstanding columns and now her blogs at dianawest.net to the public policy debate. You can also find her writings from time to time, places like the Daily Caller. And of course, we welcome her here to visit about things that she's touched on, particularly in her two terrific books, Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal. And seems to be a lot of that going on at the moment, Diana West, and I'm anxious to catch up with you about it. But right out of the pages of American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character, is the historical experience of World War II. And you describe in particular the role that Soviet influence operations played in protracting that war. And you've noted in your blog at dianawest.net a particular anniversary of same that we take note of right about now. Talk about Dresden and how this fits into that larger theme.
We are right this week experiencing the 73rd anniversary of the firebombing of Dresden, which killed something around the size of 25,000 civilians in a three-day campaign of firebombing, Allied firebombing. And this has always been presented to us as a terrible, atrocious, barbarous necessity to bring about the fall of Nazi Germany. What I discovered in writing American Betrayal, however, was very significant discussion and evidence, for example, by historian John Keegan, that this act was actually taken at the behest of Stalin in order to clear a path for the Red Army to more easily advance on Berlin and points west. This becomes just a signal moment of betrayal of all manner of things, including America, but certainly the people of Dresden and Europe, in the larger scheme of Soviet influence operations that prolonged the war, that turned the Allied armies essentially into allies of Stalin's territorial gains across Europe and Asia.
The theory being that the Nazis were prepared to capitulate to the West before all of this happened. So, Diana, you're saying that the Germans would have surrendered to us, but for the fact that we kept going at Stalin's behest, if I got that about right?
Well, there were many number of efforts by Germans to surrender to British and Americans. This is it's a complicated story, but the point is that there were many Soviet agents of influence in place inside all the war councils, Allied and enemy alike, and their war could end too soon, meaning that if Stalin were still inside the USSR boundaries, it would have been a complete disaster, even if millions and millions of people had been lived. The point was to keep the war going long enough so that Stalin could make these territorial gains in both Europe and Asia that we see, in fact, take place and change the world forever.
And created the horrors of the oppression by the Soviets of most of Central and Eastern Europe, and of course the Cold War and all that went along with that. Diana, fascinating background to our own time. Talk, if you would, about the rather remarkable series that you have been writing at your web blog, dianawest.net. You entitle it The Red Thread. You're up to the eighth installment of this, and you've been stitching together insights that sound as though there's still very much a successful Russian influence operation underway that was perhaps at the core of what went down in the campaign against Donald Trump during the election of 2016 and subsequently. Flesh this out for us a little bit.
Yes. Well, it's a lengthy series. It includes a lot of detail because what I find to be the most salient characteristic of our reporting today is a complete lack of context, a complete failure to probe whether there are ideological drivers here, socialism, communism. We call them, when we do speak about them, Alinskyism, progressivism, things like that. But I'm trying to go back to the font, which is, of course, Marxism-Leninism, and find out if we are looking at people who follow in these traditions inside this vast, increasingly vast, conspiracy within the Obama administration and the federal government to subvert the Trump campaign and presidency. And I am finding quite a lot of what I'm calling red threads in terms of connections, in terms of continuity, in terms of presence at the creation. It's really quite a fascinating exercise that I do hope to pursue and also make a little more manageable in terms of collapsing it so that it is more easily digestible. But this has to be done because we have essentially wiped the slate clean of all of these understandings and our own recognition of the very clear tells that we may see. I mean, I think it is extremely significant that Christopher Steele, the very famous dossier creator, was known as a confirmed socialist when he was at Cambridge in the mid-1980s. This comes from actually a book about the Cambridge Debating Society by a man who is currently Theresa May's, an advisor of Theresa May's, an anonymous kind of sourcing. This is something, a history of the Cambridge Debating Society. I think it is very significant that when we examine the academic output of Nellie Orr, who is the mystery woman who worked for GPS Fusion and whose husband used to be number four man at the Justice Department, we find what they called a revisionist historian, which when you actually examine what these people are all about on our campuses that came up in the 70s and 80s, out of the New Left, out of the Marxist groups on campuses, you find an apologist for Stalin. I mean, this is a true story when you go back to her work on 1930s USSR. Aren't these ideological flag something we should be looking at to understand the context in which this extreme, these felonious behaviors that we are seeing exposed were undertaken in this extremely unusual election cycle? In other words, these people were not just going out of power as Democrats and Republicans do every 4 to 8 years. They were taking ultimate risks of their careers, their pensions, their liberty itself, if these things seem to be going where they're going. And you have to understand, was there something special driving them? And I think there is. And this is what the Red Thread series is all about.
And, you know, Dinah, we're listening to a lot of fulminating, as we talked about with Congressman Chris Stewart a moment ago, about the Russian influence operations and their interference in our elections and so on. But as you say, it's not grounded in the motivations, which may well be shared by people who, as our friend Trevor Loudon has documented, actually are not only in our government's executive branch, but certainly in the United States Congress. These are extraordinarily important, as you say, tells of a much larger problem. I consider this sort of all in the general domain of counterintelligence, a truly lost art at the moment. And the work you've been doing, particularly in connection with American Betrayal and your analyses that have flowed from it, is simply incalculably important. And I want to commend you for it and thank you for taking the time to discuss it a little bit with us. Today, we'll look forward to part 9, I imagine, or maybe 9 and 10 by the time we get to you next week. But keep up the great work, my dear. Check it out, folks, at dianawest.net, an extraordinary resource for matters that all of us should be paying attention to. We'll talk with you again very soon, Dinah. Next up, we'll speak with Robert Spencer about the jihadists in our midst and other threats to Americans' freedom. Right after this.